This is time again for the Green Majority. You're listening to us here live in the city of Toronto out of CIUT 89.5 FM. We've got lots of cool stuff going on today. I have a live studio guest, so I know that it's not a robot or something today. Kimberly Carroll is in the studio today. We'll be going to her in just a couple of minutes. I've got Kevin Farmer sitting beside me, keeping me company as usual again as well. I will start off the show before we get into actually what we're going to be talking about. We've got a whole whack of special announcements that are going to be going on. I will be presenting them throughout the show. The first one I'm going to do right off the bat because it just reminded me, and I'm going to surprise Kevin here because he doesn't even know about this one as well. We've been using a Fortet song actually under fair use for quite some time, but it realized yesterday actually that because we're going to be trying to do some of our own special projects here, that we can actually no longer use our theme song that we've been using for 7 years.
Wow.
We can no longer use it. So I'm surprising you here in the moment right now. My a very, very dear friend of mine, Alejandro Rivera, who's a very talented musician, is going to be in 5 days, by the time we're doing the filming, going to be designing us a completely, entirely new theme song. So this may be the second last time you ever hear Fortet at the opening of this song. We will have a custom designed Green Majority intro theme song.
I'm nostalgic already.
I know, it's terrible. Well,
see a tear.
I know, he's getting it. Well, I remember Jordan asked me like years ago. He's like, "Do you think we should change the theme song?" I was like, "No, I love it. It's perfect. It sounds like it has that newsy sort of intro to it." And it just honestly, like, it just became so normal for me to have that song that it never even occurred to me like, did anyone actually ask for permission to use it? Now it doesn't really matter because we're using it under fair use. And we're like, we're not profiting in any way. We're all volunteers, CIUT. Nobody's profiting off of it, so it was fine. But seeing as we do want to start doing some of our own fundraising, unfortunately, that just suddenly occurred to me that that's an issue. So I may still actually email him and ask him for at least, if nothing else, prior excusal for having used it for the past time, and maybe if we can work something out to keep using it. But for now, just to cross our T's and dot our I's, we're gonna get our own custom theme song. So I'm very excited about that. She's a very talented musician. She'll be doing a custom piece for us as well. So that's exciting news, point number one. We will leave some more special announcements throughout the show. I'll be peppering them throughout the show as some breadcrumbs to lead you through to the full show to keep your ears perked. It's kind of like when the news stations do those things where they're like, "In sometime in the next 45 minutes, we're going to play a 2-second tone, and the first one to call in." It's kind of like that. You'll have to stay with your ears pressed against the speakers there to get all the cool news. Of course, everything will be posted on the website afterwards. But without further ado, that's the first one off the list. We're going to go to Kimberly Carroll, who's here on behalf of the Toronto Veggie Pride Parade and is going to be talking to us a little bit about that. So why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us how you came to be the media spokesperson for TVPP.
Oh, well, Darren, I paid them a lot of money, got naked a couple of times. No, I'm just kidding.
That's a good way to really get most jobs.
That is. It's really the blanket way to do it.
I was not aware that the environmental community had a casting couch, but all right.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. I know. I've been a television host in this country for quite a few years, and then I became a very active animal activist, and I guess I just, because that's what I do very well, I host, I do media, and, you know, so I try to, as an activist, I try to apply the skills I have the best I can to the cause. So,
all right. So, yeah. And we've actually, it's going to be on the, unfortunately, this is just the way that it worked out, but it's actually going to be on the same day as our event, but it looks like it may be slightly shifted after. What is sort of part of the other announcement to that was is that the part of the reason we haven't been able to specify the actual exact time is we're going to be doing the video shoot for our commercial to launch our campaign here at Heart House, and they're still just sort of getting back and forth because there's multiple people that have to confirm the time. It looks like it might
come do the parade, bring the whole video down and be a part of a parade. That'd
actually
be awesome.
It may actually be the other way around because it looks like what they've told me, and I need to just 100% confirm this, but what they've told me so far is it looks that on June the 1st between 4 and 5 is when we'll actually be doing the filming. The Veggie Pride Parade ends at 4. So what I may do if that ends up being, and I'm sort of 98% confirmed, is I may simply come down there with bring a whole bunch of people down to the Toronto Veggie Pride Parade and then invite people to follow me back here to U of T to Heart House afterwards. So we'll have to work it out.
That sounds awesome.
I'm sure we can work out the conflict, but at very less, there's no excuse for you not to be at the Veggie Pride Parade between 1 and 3:45 at the very least.
Well, yeah, and I think exactly. I'm not trying to take your audience away. The actual parade part takes place from like noon to 1, and we go from Bloor and Yonge all the way down to Yonge and Queen, and then we do a whole big event at Trinity Square, like a whole big veg event. And I mean, it's a lot of fun. Like, you know, probably as activists, it's not always a lot of fun. You're telling people what not to do, and people are getting pissed at you and all that sort of thing. Well, this is just a celebratory thing. You know, this is a chance. There are apparently 10% of the Canadian population, according to the latest ag statistics, is that is vegetarian or vegan in this country. So we just want to be able to say, hey, this is a good thing. You are helping animals, you're helping the environment, and you're helping your health. Let's celebrate. Let's have a good time. And also to show that, you know, you were just saying before the show, vegans get a bit of a bad rap about being like too stern or too, you know, humorless and everything. Well, we're not all like that. In fact, most of my really good friends are veg and vegan, and they're fabulous, and we have a great time. We party. And that's what this is going to be. This is going to be, we're going to have roller derby girls. We're going to have lettuce clad bikini girls and broccoli boys. We're going to have acrobats. We're firefighters. We're going to be doing, you know, Bollywood dancers. It's just going to be a really big celebration, and just to show the diversity of veg people, you know, that it's everybody from like a little 2-year-old to, and we have an 86-year-old, you know, grandpa that comes out, you know, so it's just an opportunity to say, hey, all veg people and veg curious people, come on out and just let's have a fun time and a low pressure time, and, you know, and understand that this lifestyle can be really fun and really celebratory.
There's a in some of the language that you're choosing to use, and as well as in the name of the event, you've got sort of pride and use and in these sort of things. And of course, if you're from the city of Toronto, it's pretty impossible to not notice the Pride Parade having to deal with the queer community here in Toronto. Was there an intentional correlation made with that sort of, you don't have to be shy and in the closet about it? Are you intentionally trying to make that correlation?
Well, you know, we followed suit of the veggie pride parades across the world. The first one was in Paris in 2001. So we just really wanted to have that correlation. But it does speak to the fact that, you know, the word pride has been used in a lot of social movement issues. And, you know, we are a minority population, and we just want to say, hey, come on, join us. It's not that scary. We're not that scary. So the pride thing, we went over it. We were like, is there a better word? Is there? Because, you know, obviously the Toronto Pride Parade is just so big here. But we just went, we want that connection to all the other parades across the world. And really, we are proud. We're happy. We're really celebratory that we are, you know, engaging in a diet that is cruelty-free. So, and I mean, I think the big thing, you know, because we're talking environment on this show is, you know, I think there is a disconnect between the environmental movement and the animal movement in a lot of cases. And you know, it's a really hard thing to, a really interesting disconnect to take in because environmentally, I mean, you know the stats. The UN report about 18% of greenhouse gases come from the raising of livestock, and that's more than all the transport industry put together, planes, trains, automobiles, trucks. There was a recent report that came out from World Watch Magazine by a couple of the World Bank environmental experts that put that figure up to 51%. Now, I don't know. I'm sure it's somewhere in the middle, but still an alarming amount. And then, of course, there is the land, the water degradation, the billions of pounds of manure that are going into our water system. I mean, it is really, it's getting harder and harder to call yourself an environmentalist if you're still eating animal products.
Mm. Yeah. One of the most shocking numbers that I saw that I remember from one of my textbooks when I was in school was specifically, we were talking about water consumption, and I was sort of surprised, not again, because it was totally, it should have surprised me, but I just hadn't made the connection before between different types of meat that you can eat and the different water consumption. And it was, I have to make up the numbers, but the rough ratios are the same, as it would be something like, you know, 40 liters of water for every steak, and an equivalent amount of chicken would be like 8 liters of water, and the equivalent something else would be like 1 liter of water, and then like grass was like, you know, like a 2 millimeters or something like that,
absolutely.
Or something else that you could eat. And so even just from a water conservation point of view, eating specifically beef, but beef, poultry, and any of the major meats are massive consumers of fresh water that then gets spat out the other end of this factory farming thing with full of chemicals, enzymes, proteins,
it's a mess. Altered genes, contaminating our water, you know,
hormones. And, I mean, could go on forever.
And the land degradation too. I mean, and it's not just factory farms. I mean, that's the thing. It's interesting. It just was drawn to my attention that the Earth Day Gala this year on June 12th or the 5th, they're serving meat, you know, and they have for 10 years. And to me, that's just such a disconnect, you know, and they will say, well, it's all grass-fed, you know, cattle and everything. That doesn't affect the gas emissions. That doesn't affect the land degradation, the water degradation. In fact, the stat is that grass-fed cattle produce twice as much methane because they are kept alive for twice as long, which from an ethical point of view is much nicer, but from an environmental point of view is devastating. So,
well, I think like I don't know enough about exactly the history of that particular event. Mm-hmm. So I want to make it clear that I'm not specifically making
a comment. You're not. Darren's not down with Earth Day Canada.
I'm not making a comment specifically about them, but I think if I could back it up to a less specific sort of comment, I think the extremely important point to make is that within and veganism and vegetarian and that sort of and animal rights is a perfect place to kind of find that disconnect, because mm-hmm. you're right, because if you start at impact and work your way towards that, then you might end up being vegetarian or vegan if you're mm-hmm. thinking about it that way. But if you're sort of a shall we say, the uninitiated, mm-hmm. completely uninitiated, and you're like, oh, I want to save electricity, I want to do all these great things, something like your diet is like, it's A, not obvious, the connection, because all the major companies have been trying very hard, like hiding where the brands are and hiding, you know, not arresting people for trying to film their operations. Like, they keep that all as secretive as possible. So I find it this really interesting sort of combination where you might mm-hmm. find people at that event or other events who are, you know, extremely agitated about nuclear power, all these other mm-hmm. issues, but are completely unaware and are maybe even resistant to the idea of, okay, but, you know, okay, we're all here to change, you know, in entire Ontario or Canada's policy on nuclear energy or the mm-hmm. tar sands, but you can't tell me I can't have a steak for dinner.
Yes, that's right. It's very personal.
And I sort of can't back that argument, but I understand mm-hmm. it.
Yeah. And I mean, going veg, you know, taking animal products out of your diet is single-handedly one of the most powerful things you can do for the environment. And it's one of the things you have in your control. I mean, instead of writing letters, I mean, it's all this is good. We have to be working on all different levels for the environment. But you can take a step today to change your eco footprint just like that. Mm-hmm. And so that's what's so powerful about that. But in the reverse, animal activists also have to be much more aware of the environment. I mean, I think, like I said, a lot of my cohorts are environmental activists as well. But there can be a disconnect from that end too. I mean, we want to save animals. Well, what about the animals that are dying, the species that are dying because of environmental devastation? So it's mm-hmm. it's a two-way street for sure.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really interesting angle. And Kevin, I saw your mouth moving a little bit, so I'm going to ask you to jump in here. It's like kind of being ready to. You had a comment on your tongue, and I'm going to mm-hmm. let it loose.
Go, like, go
but
for
I
it.
Think that's a really interesting point. It was the I would have to agree with you that there is potentially as much ignorance on the side of animal rights activists mm-hmm. of the harm to animals that come from non-food related activities mm-hmm. as there is ignorance of people who are ignorant of animal rights issues and care about other things. I think that's mm-hmm. a very, very interesting point. And mm-hmm. Kevin, I will go to you for comment.
Well, I was just kind of chuckling when you commented, you know, all these things are great, but you can't tell me I can't have a steak. And I was just thinking to myself, well, isn't that the bane or the downfall of all environmental movements, is that as soon as you ask someone to change their lifestyle, mm-hmm. that's when you run into the serious opposition. Like everyone,
you know, all the things that are good for the environment, they're all the things that me personally, Darren Kaster, are already doing. And yeah. then nothing else has to change.
Yeah,
it starts
exactly.
sounding suspiciously like fundamentalist church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, everyone gives lip service to the environment, except perhaps for Stephen Harper, who openly hates it. But you know, you're hard pressed to come up with people who actually say, you know, I'm against the environment, I'm against clean air, I'm against clean water. But
well, that's where the name of our show comes from, is that I don't believe that there is anyone.
Yeah,
they just don't understand the connection between the issue and what they care about.
Well, they don't, but it's the transition between the issue and making a lifestyle change where most of these things get defeated. I mean, you know, the environment always polls high in election issues before an election, but when it comes time to actually cast the vote, we discover time and time again that environmental support is broad, but it's not deep, and it mm-hmm. will run and cower in fear at the slightest mention of a trembling economy, even though that's one of the, you know, one of the most heavily promulgated false dichotomies that exists in our political discourse today. There is no choice between a healthy economy and a healthy environment. You simply can't have
you know all that stuff you're mining, that's environment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you by definition cannot be pro economy and anti or and not care about the environment. They're the same thing. Well, especially in our resource based economy, one comes from the other. So Canadians almost more than anyone else in the world cannot say that.
Well, when you look at what we're doing with climate change and the fact that we're sort of divorcing patterns of rainfall from our breadbaskets And that's happening all over the world, but we've been relatively insulated from it here in North America. So it's, you know, out of sight, out of mind, but there's droughts occurring all over the world and there's famine and starvation. And last year we had drought over at least 2/3 of the continental US, and we're probably headed for more of the same this year. And this is a natural consequence of climate change. And so tell me what economy can survive the collapse of its agricultural sector? Tell me what civilization can survive the collapse of its agricultural sector?
Oh, I got one. The Romans. Oh, wait.
Yeah, exactly. More if you read Jared Diamond's book Collapse, you'll find that more civilizations have collapsed due to a change in rainfall than any other factor. And it's just simply because
Guns, Germs, and Steel is also a good book as a side note.
Civilization has only been possible due to agriculture, and agriculture has only been possible due to a relatively stable climate. And here we are screwing with that. And we're saying, oh no, but I can't vote for the environment because I might be voting against the economy. And you won't have an economy in a world with an altered with a destabilized climate. There will be no such thing. We are not immune to the environment. It's just that. Demographically, most of us live in cities now. That's globally true, that more than half the population in the world lives in cities now. It's the first time in human history. And we think water comes from taps and food comes from supermarkets. Mm-hmm. And we're completely divorced from the reality of the origins of our air and our water and our food supply.
So Kimberly, let's relate this back to your event and mm-hmm. talk just about, you know, so people maybe are wandering by, they haven't been waiting for 3 weeks excited to come down and meet you and be at the event and have all this fun. Mm-hmm. Say they're just walking past and they see this and they see a bunch of stuff and they go, oh God, there's a bunch of those people. how do you talk to those folks? So we're not talking, there's folks that have a negative preconception about, yes, I in theory probably agree with much of what you're saying, but I have a preconception about who I perceive you to be, which in my experience is sometimes legitimately based on some people mm-hmm. who are very vitriolic about their stance on animal rights yeah. and to the detriment of all other issues. How yeah. do you combat that both with people who are not yet convinced and within your own movement? Is there maybe room for that as long as it's only some of them? Is that a negative thing that's hurting you? Mm-hmm. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of discussion within the animal rights community about the right approach. I think it takes all approaches to make a movement go forward. However, I really personally go from a very human, down-to-earth place. I mean, I'm from Manitoba. I'm a prairie girl. I grew up eating meat. I was a huge meat eater. Like, I'm talking Kentucky Fried Chicken. Steak was my favorite. But I always had that cognitive dissonance. You know, I loved animals. I loved animals, but I ate animals. What? You know, and everybody kept on saying, oh, it's okay, it's okay. And then there was just one point in my life where I remember hanging out at somebody's farm, a friend's farm, just after calving season. There were two baby calves. I've spent the whole afternoon with them, loved them, you know, just adored them, went in for dinner and steak was being served. I'm like, that's going to be the calves in 2 years. And at that moment, I just went, Kimberly, your ethics are going to be stronger than your appetite from now on. That's it. That's just it. And so for me, I understand the resistance. I did not want to face the truth. I did not want to, you know, say, oh yeah, there are billions of animals suffering in this world and I'm a part of that. You know, it makes us all guilty. It makes us, you know, this is why it's so personal, because we are all implicitly, you know, we're guilty. We're all part of this. And so, I think, you know, just really, really asking people what what the conflict is for them, what is stopping them. And it's very different reasons for different people. But basically, I really try to be gentle with it. And I really try to say, look, forget about the humane raised, grass fed, whatever. That's a lot of BS. Okay. But what you can do is just start decreasing your animal product consumption. At least start just decreasing it. So one veg day a week, or, you know, only doing meat for dinners. And the more you start going towards that, the gentler, you know, the journey is. And the more you realize it's very doable. And I really do think, just like the environment, most people, when you ask them, do you like animals, aren't going to say, I hate animals. No, they love animals. They hate what's happening. They hate that there's billions of animals, you know, suffering horrible cruelty in factory farming. They hate that, and they want to do something. So you just have to find a way to reach them on a level that is not self-righteous and preachy. Because most of us, unless we were born vegan, were meat eaters at one point.
Yeah. Where I'm basically at, and we're going to go to our music break now and just get moving with the show. But mm-hmm. where I'm personally at with mine, because it's been sort of a long process, is basically if I go and I buy groceries for any food at home, I buy no meat, nothing. Mm-hmm. But if I've been out at the pub until 3 a.m, occasionally there is a stop at a 24-hour McDonald's. And yeah. so that's, and I realize that that's absolutely horrible and I'm
it's
not promoting McDonald's, but
yeah.
it's sort of, it's the easiest way where I can like, when I have time to cook and I'm mm-hmm. going to prepare myself nice food, there's very nice vegetarian food that I can make. And it's even usually mostly vegan for myself. But you know, if you get caught mm-hmm. and you're just, you know, you just freaking want a hot dog or something like that. And you know, it's not the end of the world. You don't need to go and do 50 Hail Marys or something like that. Do your best. And I think, yeah. you know, do your best, reduce where you can. That applies to animals, that applies to energy, that applies to every single thing. And
it's,
I think
it's not
that's
an all
approach.
Or nothing thing. It isn't. Yeah. You know, I like it to be all or nothing, but but I understand the reality of the situation. Yeah. And we have to, you know, people have to take baby steps.
All right. So based on that, we're in agreement, so we'll let you stay in the show. We're gonna
Okay, awesome. And I just, veggieprideparade.ca is where they'll find all the information about the parade on June 1st, starting at Bloor and Yonge. And we'd love you to join us. Again, even if you're just veg curious.
Absolutely. So we'll have, where there's gonna be all the links to that on the
yeah.
website afterwards,
okay,
with
perfect.
The post, and there'll be links to everything. There'll be links to information about Kimberly if you want to find out more about what she's doing. We will have her back to talk about something else she's been working on a little bit later in the show, but without further ado, let's go to our music break. We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to The Green Majority. You are listening to Darren Kaster. I'm here with Kevin Farmer and, of course, Kimberly Carroll Stewart in the studio. We're going to go to our mid-show punditry. Kevin, it's time for your rant, but we had a little bit of fun last week, and I wanted to keep it going because during one of the music breaks right at the end of the show last week, you had a really great idea. So we've decided we're going to stick this section. But just to remind people sort of where we were coming in with that, was that I'm going to play, we just had a short 40-second clip of sort of where we were sort of like live in the moment developing the idea. We'll replay that short clip just to give people a basis for where we were, and then I'll throw it to you right when we come back. So this is a very short 45-second clip from last week's show, and then we'll come back and continue that discussion.
See, I would say Joe Oliver is lying, but I think... in fact, his grasp of the facts is just so poor that he's spreading disinformation honestly.
Well, we have to ask where he's getting his information from, which is largely and demonstrably, you don't need to be a conspiracy theorist to know that the people who give him his information as a public official is consultants, and the vast majority of those people are oil industry executives.
Oh, they're lobbyists, yeah.
And they're lobbyists. And so I think he can be passed off by simply the only information he has access to is the information that is people coming from people who have an invested interest.
Well, I got a real laugh when he accused the EU classifications as being unscientific, since he's rejected the advice of two prominent, since he clearly was rejecting the advice from James Hansen, who's a world-renowned expert on the topic.
All right, Kevin, the floor is yours. Go ahead.
Nice. How are you going to top that, Kev?
Yeah, Joe, I love you. You're my favorite source of humor and satire. Well, the comment that actually that Darren was referring to that we came up during the music break was when I sort of ranted like I like to that we have a system, an electoral system that selects for the properties necessary to get elected. It doesn't select for the qualities necessary to do the job. Mm-hmm. So we end up selecting politicians. To be fair, the Canadian public is rather apathetic when it comes to being informed on the issues. You know, we tend to have this intense spate of interest during a campaign and we lap up all the media sound bites. And then, you know, in what can only be considered a really generally uninformed state of mind, we go and cast our votes. And, so we end up with this class of professional politician like Stephen Harper, who's never had a job outside of politics. He's got a degree in economics. He's never been a practicing economist. He's been a political, you know, apparatchik his entire life, and now he has this ironclad grip on his own party. And so what we have is effectively a government of one, like not even, you know.
He does have one skill outside of politics. He has an excellent collection of sweaters.
Yeah, the old sweater gambit, that political chestnut. I would say there's a lot wrong with our existing state of our electoral process. And the first is proportional representation. There was an op-ed piece in the Star a little while ago that had me pulling my hair out, and it was talking about, you know, the steady decline in voter turnout, and it was saying how this was an obvious call for more liberalized forms of voting, such as voting online. And I thought, well, you're daft. It's a sign that people don't give a damn about politics. Mm-hmm. It's already easy enough to vote. You don't have to make voting any easier, and expose it to, you know, putting voting online just exposes it to fraud and sort of being hacked. You know, anything online can be hacked. But the point is that Stephen Harper is currently enjoying a majority mandate with 40% of the vote, which means 60% of Canadians are not represented in government. So
I would argue that even fewer than that is represented in government. But
I'm talking about people who actually turned out to vote. You know, considering that the voter turnout was only 50-something% last time out. You know, you've got this majority mandate with 40% of the population, which means, like I said, 60% of Canadians are not represented in government. And you're trying to look for a reason why there's falling voter turnout. You've got the majority of people with no representation in government, and you've got a system that says if you don't vote for the winning candidate, you don't get representation in government. And a first past the post system is just woefully, woefully inadequate for a multi-party system. It makes sense in the States where two parties have a death grip on the electoral process. But most modern democracies are some form of proportional representation. It's just Canada, the US, and Britain that are, you know, still stuck in these old models.
I think, and I don't want to get too far into the voting aspect of it, only because what I'd love, there's actually Dave Meslin is someone in Toronto who's done a lot of work on something called the Fourth Wall. I'd actually like to get him into the show to talk about proportional voting. So maybe we'll stay away a little bit, just not get too far into that. What I really wanted to focus on from what you were saying was specifically this, just to hammer home the idea, and Kimberly, I think this is where you'll be able to jump in, is to make that relationship between what we're talking about with politics and what we're talking about with journalism. mm-hmm. And what's happened to the newspapers and all the major media outlets is that you've got, very similar to contemporary journalists, you've got a whole class of people who are deferred to as authorities mm-hmm. that really don't actually have any reason to be authorities. Mm-hmm. Stephen Harper is not a PhD in anything related to anything that he governs. I'm fairly certain that he has none at all. Mm-hmm. And no, that doesn't mean that you have to have a PhD to govern. What it is that you have to understand that when Stephen Harper is saying something, he's, whether you agree with him or not, whether his facts are right or not, he is saying something that he has been given to say. Yeah. Maybe it went through some spin doctors, maybe it went through some PR campaign people, but he's been handed this. Mm-hmm. He didn't sit down and devise all these policies. He's been handed these policies, and that either approves them or doesn't approve them or maybe fiddles with it. And the same thing that I think is, and this is where I'll leave it with you, Kimberly, is mm-hmm. the same thing is sort of what's happening with the media, which is why I'm so proud to be doing the Green Majority and mm-hmm. why I'm so happy that we're growing what we're doing, and we're going to hopefully have a lot more access to people by getting video and everything, is most of the journalists who write most of these articles, all the ones who have, like most of the contemporary journalists all over the world who have, say, physics experience and used to write science articles, they've all been fired. Mm-hmm. All the people that actually have experience in like training in politics as opposed to just covering politics, they've all been let go because they can't afford to pay those people for those specialities. Mm-hmm. So what we have is a whole bunch of people with journalism training and nothing else, which is great. That's fine. Except that we defer to them as authorities. So when they get a press release from a company or a statement from a politician, they don't have the time, energy, resources, or know-how to fact check it, to put Absolutely it into context, not. To do any of that stuff. Yeah. And so they're left with, okay, I could either waste, you know, stay up for 48 hours straight researching this, or I could just copy paste and send it on its way.
I worked in a newsroom. I've worked in many newsrooms, and man, there's no time. There's no budget. You can't do that kind of research. You just can't. I mean, it really becomes a fancy way of reorganizing a press release and presenting it. That's what most news outlets do. There are some still very good news outlets that give enough of a budget to the investigation, to the research, but there's so few far in between, and they are getting, they're becoming dinosaurs. They really are. And that comes back to the public, because we want everything. We want our news to be fast food. We want people to look good, smell good, talk good. We don't care what's behind it, because we don't have time to invest either. Just like the journalists, we are living in this fast-paced society where we're multitasking, and we don't have time to go in depth into everything. So we just want quick sound bites that are powerful. What bleeds leads. You know, that was always our thing in the newsroom. And so, it's a phenomenon that I don't really know what the answer is, because it starts with every person who is too busy to look beyond the headline. And that's what the media is feeding off of. And then that's what politics is feeding off of, because, you know, they're just, the media is going to feature the prettiest politician or the best, you know, spoken politician. They don't really care about the content or the truth necessarily behind it.
Well, I think, and Kevin, I'll get your comment on this this idea, whether or not you agree with me, but I think a lot of the idea when people say, well, you know, this newspaper is a left-leaning newspaper, or this newspaper is a right-leaning newspaper, or whatever, a lot of the time it's not that they've gone and done separate research. It's that they're usually taking it from the same press release and just put their own bias on it. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair assessment, do you think?
Well, I think what's a fair assessment is that you know, the consolidation of the media and fewer hands is squelching independent voices. And you've got, you know, say something like the Toronto Star, which is just knee-jerk liberal. They're uncritically liberal. They've supported every liberal candidate that's ever come out. You know, they always give some weighty analysis as to why they chose the liberal candidate, but it's always the liberal candidate. It's never anything but the liberal candidate. And they've had up on their website now for at least a month why we endorse Justin Trudeau as the liberal leader. Liberal party leader. And you've got this platform that you know, people would like to think that journalism is fair, balanced, you know, critical. And
I keep getting this wrong. Are you fair and I'm balanced, or am I fair and you're balanced?
I think I'm neither. Right.
Okay. I'll be both. It's fine.
Yeah, it's up to you. It's up to you to carry the flag. We've seen a tremendous consolidation of media in fewer and fewer hands, and I think that's led to a tremendous narrowing of editorial freedom and a narrowing of the political discourse. And we have papers like The Star that are openly politically biased. I mean, they're just, how can you vote liberal 100% of the time and not call yourself a liberal mouthpiece?
And what paper isn't unbiased now? Like,
exactly,
that used to be
exactly.
The first rule in journalism, unbiased reporting, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know where that went out the window.
Well, I think it's because there's more and more outlets in fewer hands. Mm-hmm. I think that just the discourse is being narrowed, and people are exerting, you know, it was like, who was it in the States? Was it Murdoch?
Rupert Murdoch is the part or majority owner or most active owner of Fox News. Is that,
yeah,
is that right?
So, you know, these people that own so many outlets that it's outrageous. Like, they own so many news media that it's outrageous that reporters don't want to offend them even when they're working at another paper because they might need them as a future employer. Like, it just sends – like, that kind of ownership just sends a chill really through
the spectrum. Absolutely. What I was going to say was that you just actually made a really – unintentionally made a really good correlation to the quote-unquote AP scandal that was going on where the U.S. government went and took records from Associated Press. And what's with all the commentators that I was listening to, the, of course, alternative media that I listen to from the U.S., things like the Young Turks and the David Pakman Show and other great American alternative media that are actually doing research and actually looking into these things, were saying was, yeah, okay, but the government's been doing this for years. Mm-hmm. You guys only started flipping out when they took your stuff.
Yeah.
But this isn't the first time. You're acting like this is the first time they've ever done this. It's not true. This happens all the time. And I think that's one of the cases there, was they're just like going about blindly sort of... You know, here's the press releases we got today. Okay, let's rewrite this into news headlines. And then people take it as fact, and then politicians come on to comment, and people take them as authorities. And neither the journalists nor the politicians they have are any of them are authorities. And if your starting piece of information is a press release by the company, you've got a PR campaign that's now voiced by two people being presented as independent authorities, both of which are neither of which are actually independent authorities. Mm-hmm. And then we wonder why everyone's so misinformed. And again, you don't have to be a conspiracy theorist. It doesn't need to be a global takeover of, you know, a bunch of men or women sitting and smoking cigars in a dark room. It's just the way the system is set up, and just being aware of how the system is, and that when you read a newspaper, it doesn't mean it's a fact. It might have facts in it, but everything in it isn't necessarily a fact, I think, is where we get there.
Yeah, well, just to tie it to something concrete, I've mentioned it on the show twice now that we're approaching a tipping point in climate change with regards to thawing permafrost, and the basic reality is that so already the planet has warmed about 0.8 degrees Celsius since pre-industrial times. And if we turned off all anthropogenic emissions tomorrow, the planet would continue to warm by at least another degree by the end of the century, bringing us to a grand total of 1.8 degrees Celsius. That's if we turned everything off tomorrow, and remembering that our target is 2 degrees Celsius. And recently from Oxford University, from the Earth Sciences Department, Dr. Anton Vax has calculated that the tipping point for permafrost thawing is 1.5 degrees Celsius. Which means even if we shut everything off tomorrow, we're going to pass the tipping point of permafrost, of thawing permafrost, which will in fact release gigatons of methane into the atmosphere in an unstoppable process that will so thoroughly dwarf human emissions that shutting off everything, once that process starts, if we were to shut off everything, if we were to go, holy crap, you know, we've unleashed, you know, gigatons of methane from the permafrost, let's shut everything off, it won't matter anymore because there's just so much methane there, it's just not even, it dwarfs our own contribution. And I've been on a letter writing campaign, like, it keeps me up at night, and I can't get anyone to take this story seriously. I'm even getting responses from people that are, you know, thanking me for my input, and I'm like, how can this not be the single biggest news story going? We're committed to passing an irreversible climate change tipping point that will probably reduce humanity to being hunter-gatherers struggling for survival at the poles. Like, we're headed for an obvious, you know, scientifically verifiable disaster.
Well, and then what happens though, Kevin, is that because, like, you're saying that, and then every other outlet isn't mentioning it, or if they're mentioning it, they're like, well, some scientists think this might be a problem, and mumble, mumble, mumble. You're an extremist. You're the outlier. Therefore, you must be crazy.
Because exactly. That's really the impression
news,
I'm getting.
If it were really news, it would be on the news. And that's most people's attitudes.
You know, from a media standpoint, though, there's a very logical reason. It's ridiculous. But the fact is, the environment does not have a face and its own personal story.
Right.
That's what media loves. And that's where maybe we're falling down as activists, is we need to find the more personal stories, the more, you know, bringing it back to the people, the animals we can identify with. I mean, that has to just happen over and over again. Otherwise, people hear these stats. I mean, I heard these stats last week on your show, and it froze my heart. I mean, they're horrific. However, you know, in the jumble of stuff going on, those numbers just, they don't mean anything to people, right? And you need to put a face, you need to put stories, you need to outline how does your life change, you know? Right. And that's, I think that's maybe where we're falling down, is we need to paint more of a picture, a more horrifying picture for people, you know?
Well, I think, and I'm actually sort of, I think we're really getting somewhere with this topic. I'm going to live sort of put you on the spot and ask if maybe, because it's not as time sensitive, maybe we can come back another time to talk about what we're going to talk about.
Sure.
I'd love to keep going with this.
Absolutely.
The other reason I wanted to do that as well is that because we're sort of getting towards the end of the show here, I do have a couple of announcements I need to make. So I'm just going to break quickly for those announcements, and then let's come back to this topic, because it is very much related to all of what we're talking about. Is this is why we're trying to do the Green Majority. This is exactly what we're doing. As a reminder, neither Kevin nor I, you can correct me if I'm wrong, have ever received a paycheck for doing this.
Oh, crap, no.
I don't think I've even ever taken you out for a beer, but that's because it would come out from my come out of my pocket. I don't have any money either. I worked as a server, okay. So that's part of what we're doing to launch this. Is we want to start doing an actual TV show. One of the, you know, you were saying that people get selected to be on this because they're, you know, the beautiful politician, or they're or the news anchor with the nice blonde hair or something like that. It is a complete coincidence that both Kevin and I are dashing young men.
Oh yeah.
We will of course be doing have cameras soon. So you can stop laughing. Don't laugh too hard, Kevin. People will wonder which one of us you're laughing about.
Yeah, I got a face for radio. Let me tell you.
So Kevin may or may not be on the TV show. I will, however, though. of his own volition, of course. I would never prevent him from coming on. But this is really what we're getting at, is that there is no cash incentive for us to do this. We, Kevin and I, both do this because we're really interested and it's important. And we're both pulling our hair out, screaming, being like, it's like, I forget what the thing is from, but it's like, Jim Carrey's line is, but like, I feel like, oh, it's from Zoolander. Will Ferrell's line. He's like, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. How does nobody notice he only has one look?
Yeah.
That's so like true. That's both Kevin and I here every week being like, I can't believe nobody else is talking about this. So I guess we have to. And so
it's not sexy enough. Like, that's what it comes down to. It has to be sexier.
Video. We'll get some of those lettuce bras
and
broccoli bikinis going on.
Oil up.
No problem. Absolutely. Like, whatever we have to do to get this out there. So as this, I'll just want to take a moment to talk about some of the other special announcements quickly here, and then we'll come back and kind of wrap up the show. Again, so Kevin, some of these you don't even know about. So we've got Alejandro Rivera is going to be doing a new theme song for us. That'll be ready for the June the 1st is the idea now. I hope so, so that we can start launching stuff with that. I also have been talking to someone about getting a new logo. I actually really like our logo, but the problem was is that there was never a high enough DPI for any computer people. There was never a high enough resolution image of that, so it really prevented us from doing things like putting it on merchandising and stuff. We did do some work with Repair the World, which is a company out of the U.S. that makes t-shirts out of recycled plastic bottles and cutting room floor scraps. I actually have a couple that I got as testers, but we never started selling them because I wasn't really happy with sort of how the logo was coming out. So in addition to having a new theme song for June the 1st, Kevin, we will also have a new logo. Basically, the entire branding is being redone now, and you didn't have any warning. Basically, as of yesterday, all of the branding is being redone. So we will soon have a new logo. We will soon have a new theme song show. For when we have the camera ready, we're going to start doing some filming as soon as we can get this Indiegogo campaign, which is the June 1st. After you go to the Veggie Pride Parade, you'll come down and be in our video. Part of the thing for that is that we've actually been able to organize with Steam Whistle, which is a local purveyor of fine beer, who also has a lot of water conservation efforts that they've done.
They've undertaken some really good programs.
They've done some really cool stuff, and we've talked to them before, but I want to get them back on the show to talk about it. But however, they have, and this is really important, so everybody sort of pay attention, sit down, stop driving for 1 second. Whoever brings the largest team to the video shoot on June 1st, between 3 and 5, I'll be more specific about it'll be a half-hour window. The actual shoot's only going to take 20 minutes. But I'll narrow down the time as soon as I can. But right now, it's between 3 and 5 on June the 1st. Whoever makes the largest team, so what you've got to do is you've got to email me what your team is, whoever's coming, and then everybody's got to show. Whoever brings the largest team is going to receive a Steam Whistle prize pack. So this is going to include free beer. I'm going to have stuff like t-shirts, bottle openers. There might even be, they've said something about this cool cooler. We've got a really awesome Steam Whistle prize pack. Of course, everybody's got to be over the age of 19. And of course, nobody can open it here. This is a takeaway prize pack. So we're not going to be setting up and having a party here at Hart House, but there will be a whole bunch of stuff. I've actually organized the beer to be, they've got some gift certificates they're going to give us. I believe they're going to give us some actual beer as well. It's going to be those briefcases of cans. So even if you're on your bike, you should be able to carry it. It's not going to be a giant thing of bottles. So there will be a Steam Whistle prize pack for the largest team that comes down to our video shoot. If people just email us with what your team is, you can also add people up until the last day. But I just wanted to do that just so that, like, sort of the day of, there's not two teams that say, okay, let's say we're the same team, just to get the prize back. I want this to be a real incentive for people to get their friends to come down. It'll only take a half an hour of your time. You will be immortalized in video as what will be the first piece of our video project to raise money for us to have our own video equipment. So that's really exciting. So that's the Steam Whistle. The last piece of news I want to mention before we move on here, and all this is going to be reiterated on the website afterwards as well, is that, Kevin, I know you'll remember Gordy Warnoff came on the show, the host of the Junk Raiders on Discovery Channel, came on months ago. He basically, Junk Raiders, if you haven't, I don't actually have television, so I had to learn about it. I'd heard of the show, but I had to go watch it online because I don't have TV. But basically what they do is it's one of those shows like on Discovery Network where they go and they find scraps of things and make recycled furniture out of it. So he's got all sorts of cool stuff. Gordy is awesome. He's been a huge, huge helper of the show. Really cool guy. It was great to have him on. He has agreed, Kevin, this is the last piece of news, to actually make us a one-of-a-kind limited edition Green Majority news desk out of recycled materials.
Oh, sweet.
So when we have our actual studio, so this won't be right at first, this will be about a year after we get going, we're going to find a temporary space to do the video shooting for now, and then after about a year, once we're set up and we have some support and some actual funding going on so we can start actually doing larger projects, we will have our own video studio. Once we have our own actual studio, we will have a one-of-a-kind Gordy Warnoff recycled materials and recombined wood desk custom. Very nice. Just for us. It'll be amazing. I've even said maybe, you know, there could be like a little planter in it so I could have live grass in my desk or something like that. I have no idea. It's going to be really cool, but Gordy is amazing. He's going to be doing that. So doing something like that is fairly expensive. So what I told him was that just tell me what the cost was. He's going to just do it for cost. And then probably when we're ready about a year from now, we'll probably have our own independent little Indiegogo campaign just to raise a couple $100 to pay him for his work there. But he's putting in an amazing amount of work, and it's a really, really generous offer by him. So just to recap, we've got new branding, we've got a new theme song, we've got new logo, we're going to have a brand new Gordy Warnoff desk, and we've got the between 3 and 5, we'll be narrowing down to half an hour window. It is only going to take half an hour, but right now, June 1st, between 3 and 5 for the video shoot, it will be downtown, in the downtown core, most likely at Hart House. And the last thing is the biggest team that comes out will get a Steam Whistle prize pack. So that's all your news update. I know that was a big chunk of time, woo! But there was a lot we had to get through. There's a lot going on, and there's only a week left. So yeah. With the last few minutes, actually, I'm not seeing a clock in front of me. How much time we got left there? Perfect. We've got about 10 minutes. So I want to get just a little bit more back into some of that stuff, but let's give people a chance to breathe on it. So we're going to go to another just 30-second music break. We'll give you a chance to kind of absorb all of that information. Then we'll come back and wrap up the show. So we'll be right back.
In other cities, there's amazing examples of offices that are set up just for...
All right, we are back. You're listening to The Green Majority. I've got Kevin Farmer and Kimberly Carroll in the studio. Kimberly, I've given you the last couple of minutes here. The floor is yours to talk about quickly about one of your other projects. Maybe we can have you back on to spend a little bit more time on it. But you were just relating a thought for us there between what I'd been, just been speaking about. So the floor is yours.
Well, I was just talking about, you know, how to make these issues more relatable to the general public. And that's where one of my babies in my activism comes in. It's an ad campaign called Why Love One But Eat the Other. And I'm with Mercy for Animals Canada, and we're running this campaign across the across Canada, Vancouver, Calgary, Saskatoon, Winnipeg, Ottawa, Montreal, and Halifax. So on trains, buses, LRTs across the country right now, there are these big ads that ask the question, why love one but eat the other? And it's a very different approach than just the sort of like shock, you know, like, you know, why are you doing this kind of ads? I designed it, you know, with the help of some very talented people to basically have two animals facing each other. You've got a cute dog, a cute pig, you've got a chick and a kitten, you've got a cow and a Labrador, and with the question, why love one but eat the other? And so what these ads do is they really draw people in. You know, people are, you know, drawn into the cuteness, the cute factor. I mean, I'm not going to lie. That was a big part of designing the ads. But once you have people engaged, you've got them. And then we go into talking about the characteristics of these animals we only usually consider food. And then, you know, talking about their personality and their intelligence. And then you go further into the ad and you see the factory farming. You see the strip of factory farming photos. You see what these animals that we've just compared to your cats and dogs are experiencing within the Canadian factory farming system. So we found that this ad series has just been incredibly effective, like droves of people going veg because of these ads. And that was, you know, the approach that we took was just, okay, how do we speak to people's hearts? And then once we have, you know, them engaged heart-wise, then we can engage their minds as well.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think I remember seeing those ads, and you did find a terribly, terribly cute little baby pig.
Oh, yeah. So, really, I mean, what baby pig isn't cute, right?
Well, but yeah. I think, but it's, you know, again, it's in a matter of exposure here, and we've only got about a minute left here, mm-hmm. but just sort of to sort of tie all of this together, and that's a lot of the reason why what we're doing, and it has very much to do with what you're doing. But sort of the difference between sort of the campaigns that you've been working on and what we're trying to do here at the Green Majority is there, I think there is a, and so it's kind of why I always ask that question about mm-hmm. how do you see addressing the issues in your community, and that applies to animal rights, it applies to mm-hmm. Every issue has its, you know, how do you combat the people, or, you know, interact with the people that aren't already on your team.
You have to speak to what they are concerned with. You have to speak to what they personally care about.
And I think that's a lot of like what we are trying to do here is mm-hmm. provide a platform where any question can be asked. Mm-hmm. You know, if we had somebody, if, you know, Joe Oliver came on and came on the show and said a bunch of nonsense, we would say we don't agree and can you prove that, or you know, we're not going to give them a free pass to be a mouthpiece, mm-hmm. but we will have anyone on as long as they are willing to sort of address questions. We're interested. If Joe Oliver has a good argument that we just weren't aware of, and turns out Kevin and I was wrong, Kevin, keep a straight face. For 2 minutes, keep a straight face. But if he's got a good argument and we've misunderstood something, mm-hmm. I want to know, because my issue is being correct. Mm-hmm. I want the best information that's going to make the best decisions. Yeah. And if I'm wrong, then come on and tell me I'm wrong.
Would you follow that up with a hug?
Absolutely. If Joe Oliver needs a hug, I absolutely happily give him a hug.
All right, let's start a Joe Oliver hug campaign.
No problem.
Maybe that's what he just needs.
Or just get him to hug a tree or something.
That's,
I don't know.
Right.
But I mean, the end of the day here, you know, Kevin and I have our own things that we're really interested in, but we're interested in them as topics. We're not completely... It's not a faith-based sort of, this is the position that I take and nothing else. We're interested in facts. And the reason why Kevin and I are so ardent about it is because every single time we've gone to check facts, it reinforces our point of view, not goes against it. But if we're wrong, we want someone to say so. And that's what this is supposed to be. This is supposed to be a platform where ideas and facts can be discussed and put it out. And in listening to Kevin and I, you may in fact actually switch your position against us. You may go, you know what? I don't think they have a good argument at all. Now that I've heard what the environmentalists are saying, you know, I'm actually, you know, screw them. If that's your reaction, then fine. But there's a real lack of a real platform where there is no kind of show position on stuff. We just want to create a stage where all are welcome and where all ideas are welcome.
And the discourse, right?
And I forget who it was that put it out there, but it was something like, you know, being a rational person means that anyone's opinion is worth listening to as long as you understand that if you're wrong, you'll be flayed alive. And in a literal sense. And I think that's the best way to look at it. You know, we're here open to all ideas as long as if you present your idea, you're willing to take criticism on it because we're not letting anybody have a free pass. Right. Anyway, I think that's enough pontificating about the show today. Kevin, I want to thank you very much. You'll, of course, won't be going anywhere. We'll be staying with us here on The Green Majority. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks, Darren.
And Kimberly Carroll,
but I'm
of course,
being sent away.
You're being sent away.
Enough of your animal ways.
Kimberly Carroll, thank you very much for coming in, of course.
My pleasure.
If you want to once again just give people the website information. We'll have it on the site as well.
So it's the veggieprideparade.ca and then the Why Love campaign. You can find information at chooseveg.ca. You can find out all about the Across Canada campaign and Mercy for Animals Canada.
Okay. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Of course, this was, I'm Darren Kaester. You're listening to The Green Majority. We're produced live at CIUT 89.5 here in Toronto. You can always check our website. As I said, all the information, everything we talk about, I spend quite a bit of time writing little show posts at the end of the show with a million little hyperlinks and all that stuff. So anything you might have missed, I know both Kimberly and I are guilty of talking kind of fast. Kevin occasionally as well. So anything you might have missed, please do check the website, greenmajority.ca. Other than that, we have lots of exciting stuff. So there's a lot happening between this next week. Please do go check out the Facebook, check out the website. But other than that, radio friends, we will hear from you next week. You've been listening to The Green Majority, and have a great week.